There are some weeks when I sit down at my computer and it seems like I have nothing to say and everything to say. This has been one of those weeks. We've been so full of words, haven't we? So full of words. And I have so appreciated music and silence and hiking as I recuperate from the turmoil of the week. This week we had one of those moments that only happen maybe a few times in our lifetimes, the kind that get etched in our memories. Where were you when you heard the news? When you figured it out? Like many of you watching the results on Tuesday evening, the realization came slowly to me as I watched the returns with my progressive neighbors. It was like a slow motion unraveling of a dream that slowly turned into a nightmare. Someone found a New York Times site that had a meter that predicted the election. Was anybody else on this site? By 8 p.m., it had a 95% chance of Trump winning the election. And still, most of us were not able to take it in, and our eyes continued to widen in disbelief as the night wore on and the map got more and more red. And then we started to imagine the impact on immigrants, and thinking particularly of all those young people who are on those lists, the DACA and DAPA lists, now in the hands of the government, on Muslims who are already having prejudice and hate crimes against them, on women, on our children. One of my neighbors contemplated whether she could go visit her family over Thanksgiving, and a few others drank far more tequila than they probably should have that night. Teachers wondered what they would tell their middle schoolers, and I started to think about this gathering on Sunday. At one point, I texted Chris. He told me between services that he was actually still in that state of disbelief when I first texted him. And then Tad texted me. We had all of you in our hearts in that moment. Now, for others, the news was sudden. Constance Holden, one of our members, went to sleep. She was in Scotland at a retreat. She was confident that the first female president would be announced by morning. Her 9/11 moment, as she recounted it, was overhearing someone speak of Hillary's concession speech as she was making her way to breakfast. Now, comparing a U.S. election to a terrorist attack, as many have done, can seem extreme, but the inner experience of it is not that much different. It's a shock to the system. No one predicted this, and the world is no longer what we would expect it to be. With those shocks come disbelief, a fear for the future, and bewilderment. And at its core, Tuesday was more than an election of one candidate to be the next president and a variety of other candidates and ballot measures. It was really a turning point in the soul of this country. What kind of people are we going to be? Are we building a future where the most marginalized can find their way to hope and feel safe? Or will they slink back into the shadows of fear? A future that values all people, regardless of their gender, their sexual orientation, their skin tone, their economic status, or their religious affiliation. And particularly around a religious affiliation, this country was founded on that. Founded on being a place for religious freedom. And now that's called into question. We are a religious tradition that is also founded on a place for religious freedom. Boy, do we need one another right now. And boy, do we need our voices to be heard right now. Are we going to be a country that fears difference, that uses ugly power to build a homogeneous facade of what it means to be American? Now, because of this election, many fear that our country will be one that is less safe, less kind, and less available to a huge segment of its population. Those who have always felt vulnerable are now left even more so. Those whose voices have been silenced will be further quieted. Those who have always felt marginalized will be pushed further to the periphery. And those who feared that they were seen as inferior now have confirmation of that in actual percentages. So sitting here in the aftermath of this election, the question arises, what do we do now? In an email to the listserv this week, Larry Lavender reminded me of what I believe is to be the beginning of this journey, and it will be a long journey. In many indigenous cultures, when things are in disarray, the shaman will ask the people, when did you stop dancing? When did you stop singing? And when did you stop telling your stories? Because in the disarray, all of this is held in our bodies. All of this is held in our bodies. And how few communities we have now where people can dance and sing and tell their stories together. But our bodies hold it all. As a new book came out that is now beginning to add the science to that. Everything that comes into us is physical. All the information, all the media, everything. And our bodies need ways to move it through us so we don't get stuck and mean and rigid. So we need communities that come together to sing. And we need communities that carouse in color together. And we need communities that tell stories and don't stop telling the stories. We need multi-generational communities where the stories get passed down. This is what we need first and foremost. This is what we need to do now, is be in the stories of our own grief, our own bewilderment. Be with one another so we can move this through our bodies. And then, with our souls reconnected, caught up to the shock that we've experienced, find ways to be the bridge builders. Find ways to look beyond the othering that we do consciously and unconsciously, trying to figure it out. Find ways to move through our anger at what happened and become a sacred community, connected body, mind, and soul, that fights, yes, fights, but on principles and values, and not against people in a way that dehumanizes them. This is a tall order. There's a lot of anger on both sides right now. But if we do not do this work as sacred work, souls intact, first, being with one another in consolation, in lamentation, sharing our stories, we cannot be that beacon of hope in the world. So may it be our sacred promise to one another to be together, to share stories, to sing, and to do the sacred, powerful, and most needed work of being the bridge builders. Amen.
So here's a story. The Bridge Builder by Will Allen Dromgoole. An old man going a lone highway came at the evening cold and gray to a chasm vast and deep and wide, through which was flowing a sullen tide. The old man crossed in the twilight dim. The sullen stream had no fear for him, but he turned when safe on the other side and built a bridge to span the tide. "Old man," said a fellow pilgrim near, "you're wasting your strength with building here. Your journey will end with the ending day. You never again will pass this way. You've crossed the chasm deep and wide. Why build this bridge at evening tide?" The builder lifted his old gray head. "Good friend, in the path I have come," he said, "there followed after me today a youth whose feet must pass this way. This chasm that has been as naught to me, to that fair-haired youth may a pitfall be. He too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I am building this bridge for him."